Donald on a Kitchen talks about food. Donald on a Kitchen talks recipes. Donald on a Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donald on a Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table right in the middle of KHOI Community Radio. We have a great studio here and great people to help us put this show on. We talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. We get around to a little bit of everything. It is summer. It is lovely.
Best part of summer.
It is true. The cliche, wait around in Iowa because the weather will change, and it changed with a vengeance last weekend after a week of record heat and unbelievable
record mosquitoes.
Humidity was something else. And what would we talk about if we didn't have the weather? But it was hot, hot, hot last week. Saturday, this front moved through. And like Donna said, it was visually dramatic.
Right. When those big dark clouds come in, it gets dark almost, like apocalyptic feeling, you know? And then sometimes a little ray of sun will burst through and you think, oh, this is Maxfield Parish-like. You know, I mean, it was really, I kind of think it was stunning.
It was stunning.
And out here on our prairie, where the sky is just everything.
And we can watch it come from a long ways
away.
That's right.
You see it rolling in.
It happened to hit Farmer's Market just about a half hour before everybody was planning on picking up and going home. A lot of those tents got picked up and were sent home without the farmers because, boy, it hit and things went flying.
Got a little gusty, didn't
got
it?
Got a little bit gusty.
Well, I didn't mind. It blew the mosquitoes away. It was at least temporarily. It was
a good thing.
It was a good thing. Now, there's another thing I noticed. I was driving out to Peterson's Pits last night for my evening swim. And, of course, the corn is quite tall now and straight and tassels.
Oh.
Okay, now that's where everybody's having sinus problems. pollen, corn pollen, and more pollen.
Corn is a living entity here, and we have oceans of it. I want to mention a little bit about what's happening in the garden. Now, we've had kind of a late season for things. Thank goodness for people that grow things in hoop houses because they got our early vegetables already. But if you get growing things in the garden, this weather of hot, cold, high humidity, low humidity, it's been kind of a challenge. I've been harvesting my first onions, the first onions that you harvest, the kind that don't keep well, but you're just hungry for a really
that are, they're
nice,
sweet
juicy
and juicy.
Onion. Yes. I grow two early onions, Ailsa Craig and Walla Walla. So Walla Walla's just didn't quite like this weather. Ailsa Craigs are looking beautiful. They're big. They have green tops.
Too wet, maybe, for the Walla Wallas. Because they're so moist on their own.
Yeah. Who knows? They're there, but they're not state fair winners this year, Donna. But we do have the first onions. And I want to, I brought something into the studio so I could
hold it up. They're real cute, Lana.
Hold it up to the microphone. I brought in another kind of onion. I always like to try something new. These are called Barletta. Early pickling, small, white onions. Now, I should have harvested them. I harvested some of them already at the appropriate size because the really small ones.
The appropriate size is about just a good inch, a little bit more. Yeah,
and they're lovely for spring.
Now, these are not pearl onions. These are different.
No, they're bigger, and they do keep growing to fist size, and they're good. They're good. It says, I got this from a seed catalog called Seeds from Italy. Seeds from Italy. It used to be from Italy, but now they are distributed from Kansas, in Kansas, believe it or not. But it's a fine seed catalog. And Barletta onion, small white onion, no more than 3/4 inch in diameter. Ha, I'm going to let mine
go
bigger.
The pickling onion tradition, as I know it, is distinctly English.
Mm-hmm.
I first had them in New Zealand, and it requires malt vinegar, which I had to buy from Marcus at Mucky Duck before it was Mucky Duck. It is a very English kind of vinegar, and you pickle them with that and kind of mustard seed, traditional pickling spices, more or less. But it's the malt vinegar that makes the difference. You just clean them up, drop them in the jar, boil the vinegar and a few other, you know, I would look this one up before I did it. But it's very English, and actually they're quite yummy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We could do well to, if you get a lot of them, let me know, Lana.
Okay. Pickled onions, onions. Well, although hot weather, cold weather, summer bounces back and forth, we want to talk about cool recipes for hot weather. Donna, you've got a few things you'd like to say.
Well, in preparation for, and I must say, great anticipation for the tomato season, which is about to come, you know, the thing that happens is it's like the first corn and the first tomatoes are always the most delicious. And maybe there's a little bit that your palate gets used to them and it's not so exquisite. But there's also something about the first fruits of the vine. It's sweeter, it's more vibrant, and we're coming upon it. So although this is a recipe, my recommendation for the first tomatoes basically is quarter them or cut them in wedges, put salt, pepper, and a little olive oil on them, and just eat them plain.
Just eat them.
Yeah, and if you really have to get fancy about that, you could cube them and put them on a piece of baguette and have a bruschetta. The baguette should be sliced, toasted, and a open clove of garlic should be lightly rubbed on the toasted surface. And then you just put the tomatoes with the olive oil, salt, and pepper. Some basil, if you like.
It would
chop
not, be a, not
basil.
Be amiss. Yes.
And then just pile it on and you have bruschetta. But I like to be really, I don't put vinegar on those first tomatoes. They do not need it. But for in the maybe 2 weeks later when you're tired of just eating them that way because, you know, we humans demand constant change. We get bored really easily. I found a gazpacho recipe that I am going to try. It is so easy peasy. So basically you put about 2 pounds of ripe tomatoes that you have. You only have to take the core out. You don't have to take the seeds out. I am so lazy about I will peel a tomato if you need a peeled tomato by dropping it. And peaches too. You know, you just make a pan of boiled water. You drop it in very quickly enough and then the peel will come off. You don't want to cook the peel. Peach or the tomato, but this doesn't even require that. So you just take the tomatoes and then it says to add a light green pepper such as an Anaheim or Italian, and the peppers will start to come in too. That's not necessarily a hot pepper, just a small light cooking pepper, one cucumber about 8 inches long, one small mild onion, which these that you've brought in would be delicious, one clove of garlic, 1 teaspoon of sherry vinegar, salt, and 1/2 cup of olive oil. And then you put it all either in the food processor or the, you could use a hand immersion blender. You just really, you know, mush it up. I mean, I suspect you could even put it in your, like, osterizer blender kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Yeah, you're just liquefying it. And then you pour it through, you strain it. And I would use my, I wouldn't strain it too heavily, but, you know, like I would probably use my, what's that thing, my old-fashioned ricer that I use for jelly making and stuff like that.
That cone?
Yeah, the cone thing. Yeah. Right. If you put it through too fine a strainer, you'll lose too much of the solids. But that's it. You blend it up, you strain it, then you can serve it with a little more olive oil or you know, a couple basil leaves floating on the surface, that will be really delicious.
I like gazpacho when it's really cold. If it's just kind of sitting around, it sort of tastes like lukewarm stuff.
Right. My guess is if you made that and let it sit for a couple of hours in the refrigerator, it would actually improve.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to try it.
It's a good summer thing.
This is from the New York Times. Just Google New York Times cooking. Best gazpacho is what she calls it.
Oh, now I was kind of planning for this show. It took me a long time to figure out how to spell gazpacho. I kind of pride myself.
Gazpacho.
Pacho.
I try to pride myself, and I know how to spell. I went to spelling bees as a kid and didn't do half bad. And
oh, I'm
boy,
a terrible speller.
Boy, I tried 100 different ways, and I did look it up. Okay, so I know gazpacho.
Yeah, you don't think G-A-Z-P-A-C-H-O, gazpacho.
That's gazpacho. And there is a segue into another thing that can be added to gazpacho, and you have told me about this. Who would have thought?
I wouldn't put it in this gazpacho recipe. This one, by the way, is called Seville style.
Oh, yeah. It seems very light and lovely.
Yeah. To sip in summer is what she says. Yeah, this is a wonderful recipe from my friend Susan Herman Loomis, who has a cooking school in France called Rue Tatin. And great, she's a great cookbook writer. Her recipes are so precise. It's mustard ice cream.
Ah.
So you kind of need an ice cream maker to make this one, though. But basically, it's the same as any custard ice cream, the base. So you just don't put any sweetener in it. So it's eggs, milk, cream, you know, that kind of thing. You prepare the base. You add a couple teaspoons of... I use not grainy French mustard, but just a common French table mustard that's more like Grey Poupon or something like that. You can find that around town. So it's basically a not sweet mustard flavored ice cream, and it's really good on the kind of chunky gazpacho.
Chunky.
Like I do, a really pretty thing to do is when you start getting colored tomatoes, like some green zebras and some yellows and some reds. I don't even make the gazpacho with it. What I'm calling gazpacho is I cut it into chunks. I pour some olive oil on it, salt and pepper, and just the tiniest amount of vinegar. And then you let the tomatoes sit, and they make their own juice. So you take like a pasta plate, a low-rimmed bowl. You put those soupy-ish tomatoes on it, and then you plop a scoop of the mustard ice cream on. It's quite fun. If you want to do a remarkable dinner time, you know, you're having a dinner party. It's a little bit elegant, but it's all very do ahead, which is good for a party, and it's fun.
Though that taste seems like when you first say mustard ice cream, you go, oh, not so good, maybe. But I could really see that with some really fine
tomatoes.
Right, just
it's like a mustard sauce that you might make. Mm-hmm. Just think of creamy with a little mustard flavor on it. One time, I can't even remember, this might have been a PFI event, and I made a lot of it, like several gallons. And I made the base up, and I think I took it over to Stom Chocolateria because they do have a commercial-sized gelato machine, and they whipped that up for me, and it was really nice.
Oh!
I know. But good neighbors.
It pays to know the good folks.
Yeah, you kind of know where
Street.
The equipment is around town. I mean, my machine, which I love, 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 because you just plug it in and it has the cooling unit in it. It's not the kind where you have to stick the bowl in the freezer, which I will say, if you're using the kind where you have to stick the bowl in the freezer, make sure that your mix is very well chilled before you put it in the churning thing, because that freezer bowl has a limited amount of chill in it. And if the mix is not already chilled, it will just be kind of cold soupish thing. So that's a trick with those kinds of ice cream makers. And with mine, since it has it's much more expensive to have this kind of unit, but it has the chilling unit built in. So you just plug the thing in, you turn the chiller on and the churner on, and it's easy peasy.
Very good.
We make a lot of ice creams, even in the winter, I must say.
Ah. I think it's one of those basic food group things, I think.
I'm teaching another class at Cook's Emporium. This is early August. You'll have to go on their website and look it up. But it's granita sorbet and ice creams. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take a class about that, I'll be there early August, Cook's Emporium.
Very good. Very good.
It's ice cream season.
You have some other things to share with us about salads and vegetables.
Oh, well, now that all the good stuff will be coming, which would be like eggplants, peppers, and, of course, tomatoes. One thing that I like to do, and this is very do-ahead also, is, you know, roasting the cooked vegetables in the oven and then chilling them and having them, you know, either you can serve them on toast or you can put them in salads. You can – these are particularly good, like, for example, if you do mixed colors of peppers and tomatoes, right? And, eggplant is a whole other thing, which I love to do. But either way, these are really good. You just toss them in olive oil, a few herbs and spices, you know, like marjoram, maybe a little oregano, plenty of basil. You could put some garlic in the olive oil and then just set them in the oven for a good slow roast. Oh, onions, too, are very, very good chopped into that. And then having it cold, if you do a good load of it, you know, like two full sheet pans is how, you know, you don't want to spread them too deeply. You want them kind of spread out so they caramelize and they get really juicy. And then you scrape it all off the pan into something, stick it in the fridge. It's really good on sandwiches. It's good in salads. Yum, yum, yum.
Yes.
That's what I cook when there's lots of tomatoes, especially ones that are maybe a little less than perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty soon we'll have lots of tomatoes and lots of peppers, and everybody will be going, oh, what do I do? You actually could do that and freeze it as well in you know, batches, more or less. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's something I'm really looking for. And Mediterranean flavors in there. You know, if you want to go with like za'atar or something like that, and any of those things, the options are endless.
Wonderful.
Yes.
Looking forward to
all
that
stuff. We're
coming
right on our good season. Yes.
I've got a little note on bell peppers here, or peppers in general, but bell peppers in particular. It's been a challenging year for peppers. And I got a little information here from the hotline, Iowa State University hotline. They have the extension folks there have information to share about.
Was this
their
in
garden.
The Ames Tribune?
No, this is in a magazine that I got called Farm News. It's from Fort Dodge, Iowa, and they have good things here. We talk about the weather changing a lot, and bell peppers do not really like this change in weather here. My peppers, yes, they're there. But, boy, they're...
Are they small and green?
Small and green, and they're just kind of not doing too much. Even when the heat came, they decided to kick in and grow a little bit. Now it's cool again. If your peppers are flowering but not setting fruit, they should be this time of year. It says bell pepper flowers may abort and fall off when nighttime temperatures drop below 60 degrees.
Whoa.
We've had that. They're gentle. They're tender little things here.
Well, you're supposed to go out and build a fire in the
garden. I don't know.
In the garden or something.
Or they don't like, when you're setting fruit, if you're a pepper, they do not like to be over 85 degrees. So talk about
fussy
being kind of
things.
Wimpy.
Well, I'll be more appreciative when we finally get some.
Of course, when my garden is full of stuff kind of up, chock-a-block against each other, so there are little microclimates in there, too. Hot peppers usually set fruit better in warmer weather than bell peppers, but when things are changing up and down out there, don't be surprised if your bell peppers are a little slow to start coming. And they, along with tomatoes, bell peppers are susceptible to something called, this sounds awful, blossom end rot. Oh, that sounds awful. That is not good in a tomato, and it's not good in a bell pepper.
It is awful. Bell peppers.
A mushy bottom on thing. Not good. Nobody likes a mushy bottom. There you go. And that
well,
also.
Well, if you get the mushy bottom ones, then you have to cut the mushy bottom off, and then they'll be good for roasting.
At least roasting. Yeah. That also is caused by changes up and down and up and
is
down.
Is that a fungal thing maybe?
Yeah. It just fluctuating soil moisture levels too. They're trying their best out there, but we ask peppers to come right when we think they ought to come. There? Yeah. And another thing that happens later on with bell peppers, there is something, this is all these horrid things that can happen. There is something called sun scald. And you can get that.
All those patches on them.
Yeah, kind of like sunburn. Huh? And that's what happens if somehow your plants get defoliated a little bit and the plants are out in the noonday sun. And yes, they will get scalded on the side, and they don't ripen well that way. So encourage lots of leaves. Tuck the fruit underneath the leaves, or you can use some row cover if you have to on a hot sunny day, and keep those
like
plants,
a little sunbonnet for each one of them. Oh boy!
And lightly fertilize, helping to keep those green leaves coming. Yes. More things in the garden. I have been harvesting and drying a lot of herbs here. Herbs we tend to just kind of let go, but I've tried to be on top of things because I learned from a herb workshop once that the best time to pick and dry herbs was yesterday. Mm-hmm. You look out there and there they are. Well, really, you should get right on it before the plant has totally put on all of its flowers. A few flowers are fine, but think of...
Is that they start to get a little more bitter, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Almost all of them. And the basils and I've grown a lot of Tulsi basil. I grow Tulsi, the holy basil, not for cooking. But
no, it's not good for cooking.
No. It's very floral, very perfumey. I do love it. I make my own
tea mix. I find it a little, it's very medicinal
flavor. It is. I guess I fell in love with it because I was at a long time ago, I was at a dance weekend. I didn't want to miss this dance weekend, and I felt a cold coming on. And they just happened to have Tulsi tea for those of us that were feeling a little off. And I danced and I drank that tea all weekend. And I guess I got a cold eventually, but it's very soothing. So I like that tea, Tulsi tea. That's Tulsi, also called holy
basil.
Yeah. And I also grow something called woodland perennial basil, wild basil. It's hard to find this, but it is a basil, comes up every year. It looks more like oregano, actually.
Is that the one that it drops its seeds and keeps coming back?
Yeah,
does it really do that? Really is... It's not technically perennial, but it is self-seeding.
Yeah, it does. It's mm-hmm. Clinopodium vulgare. Clinopodium. Like I said, it's a little short, bushy things. Beautiful purple flowers. Not a true basil. 10-inch plants have roundish green leaves.
Oh, it's not a true basil. Does it
No.
taste like basil?
Again, I think it tastes more like Tulsi. It's something I put in tea.
Herbaceous.
It's herbaceous. It possesses a mild, savory flavor. Mild. And Italians use it in dishes. And medicinally, it functions as a skin preparation and booster to the immune system. And I found, for those of you who want to look that up, that's called wild basil. And it's Clinopodium vulgare. And I got that from a catalog called Pine Tree Garden Seeds. Pine Tree. There's some stuff going on in the garden. This is KHOI. This is Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are here at our kitchen table talking about summer things, some cool recipes, some cool ideas, and onions. Yes, we are. And herbs, we're talking about those things too. We're going to dive into the archives here. Sometimes things just need to be taken out of the archive and reheated and served up again. This is from a Donna Lana Kitchen show way back in 2015 on the, well, it was July 2015. And as I was pulling up little bits of this show, I realized things go around and everything old is new again. Because one of the things we talked about on that show was all of those presidential candidates that were coming through Iowa again. Same old thing. Oh, my goodness. Of course, we had some bad jokes about coming through Iowa and how they were doing their best. And here we are again. It's doing that sort of thing again. But
yeah, but there's so many candidates now.
Oh, it's like,
it's like a constant stream.
Oh, it's like being at a really a potluck that you couldn't possibly taste everything. But well, they'll get themselves figured out.
Yeah, it should get wild at the state fair.
That's right. That is coming up.
That's the place
soon.
They all want to show up.
I don't know why, but they do.
And well, it's funny. If that's the main way that people view Iowa, they're going to get... I mean, there are a lot of things at the state fair that reflect us very accurately.
Yeah.
But it's only certain, I would say, some of the more extravagant parts of what represents Iowa.
Yeah, I think so, too. And the candidates all kind of take off their ties and put on denim shirts. And
the fattest pig and the biggest pumpkin and the most deep fried. We do have that. That's true. But there's a whole lot more going on here.
I don't know. Is that any way to run a country? I don't. We'll see. Anyway, listen close to all those folks and do make a good choice. Well, anyway, here is a little bit of an audio from Donna Lana Kitchen from July 2015. We're talking about summer and the things that go on. And Donna waxes eloquent about melons. Hope everyone enjoyed their fill of heat and humidity this week. I did some heavy-duty summer porch sitting on Sunday. Enjoyed that cool breeze. Donna, what did you do this weekend?
Well, I bought a mosquito zapper and put it on the front porch so I could sit on the front porch without frantic scratching.
Sounds like a good idea.
It's been wet this year.
Yeah. Wet, cold. Things change. That's what we love about Iowa. We'll talk about melons and summer salads this week. It's time to enjoy the summer bounty. But first, here's a short report from the Onion Creek Farm Tooth and Claw Department. I had a close encounter of the coyote and chicken kind on Onion Creek Farm. Oh, my goodness. Middle of the week, I think it was Wednesday, it was warm. I was in the house, and chickens will let you know that something is wrong. But this wasn't a chicken noise that I was used to at all.
Was it the egg laying noise?
No, it wasn't the egg laying, and it wasn't the hawk noise, which is a whole different thing. It wasn't the something is really bad, something is dying noise. Those are the three. I know those noises. And this was in the middle of the day, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Went out and looked once. Nothing going on. What is wrong? Everybody kept clocking. And about 10 minutes later, they had not given up. I go out about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, stand on the west side of my little chicken run, look over to the east side of my little chicken run. All the chickens are facing east, clacking and clacking up a noise. And on the other side of the fence, kind of in the woods, on the east, along the east fence line, there was a coyote.
Wily coyote.
Wily. He's sitting there, not a very big one, kind of a fuzzy-looking thing. It was a coyote. It was not a dog. It was a coyote, because I've seen them before. And it was sitting there just calmly looking the chickens back, kind of like it was window shopping.
waiting for an opportune moment, right? Trying to figure out how to get one of these
now,
little ladies.
And I can understand that the coyote is probably a little tired of eating rabbits by this time of year. And I bless the coyotes for eating the rabbits. But we made a big noise. The coyote ran off. I didn't have a chance to do anything more than just scare it off. What's the problem? So that's the Tooth and Claw Department report for this week. Watch out for those coyotes in your chickens. Okay. What is ripe this year? What are you eating?
Summertime.
Yes.
This is it. Okay, I have to announce that I am thrilled to say this is going to be a great year for melons. We haven't really, I mean, we've had melons, of course, every year, but they don't reach that perfection of sweetness. And these, I brought in for us to kind of lick into the microphone and slurp some musk melons.
Ooh,
and they are so fragrant that my whole kitchen, when I buy them and take them home, the whole kitchen smells like that. That's when you have a good melon year. These musk melons, this variety is a muscatine melon, which I'm assuming means that it was bred to be raised in Muscatine, which is our finest melon growing area, probably because of the sandy soil. Although these were grown closer to Ames, it is that variety. And they are butterscotch, candy sweet. Have a little slurp here.
I will.
Make some good radio noises because you guys can't smell them. You can't taste them.
They're moist. They're wonderful.
They are just so good. So, of course, I've been eating them just every which way. Plain is fine with me. Now, I grew up eating salt on my cantaloupe. Did you do that when you were a child?
No, for goodness sakes. I wouldn't put salt on them. That's how we're different.
This must be an Illinois thing, I guess. We always had salt on the cantaloupe. I also like to do the Mexican way of eating these nice orange melons is lime, salt, and a little hot chili.
Oh, now that would be good.
That's good too.
I've had that in a salad. Yes, mm-hmm. The lime and salt. In a salad, I could see
doing
that. Or
even salt and black pepper.
Oh,
I mean, there's no bad way to eat these.
Okay, so there's cantaloupe and there's melons, and some of these wonderful fruit. Are they fruits or vegetables? I think
they're fruit.
Definitely. Okay. Some of them have a real veiny-looking skin, and others are very, and we see those most around here.
Right.
Those are smooth skin.
The veiny-looking ones are supposedly technically musk melon.
Okay.
Whereas the more smooth-skinned, or at least where the netting around them is finer, is supposed to be a cantaloupe. And then there are, I don't see them too much here, but there's some wonderful French varieties, too, that are sweeter and more butterscotchy and usually smaller. And some of the orange ones even have Charente.
Oh, yes.
Is the French breakfast melon that is actually greenish on the outside, but orange and butterscotchy like our cantaloupes. And those are wonderful. So I don't know if anybody's going to be growing them this year, but boy, if they are, grab them because this should be a good year.
I have seen those in the past sold at farmer's market called a French breakfast.
Small,
right. and actually kind of lobed. They're sweet little things.
Tiny.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, our musk melons are just fabulous. So, you know, eat while the eating's good. They make wonderful salads. I was reading, what was it? It was a recipe with cucumber, musk melon, I think basil, mint, probably salt, pepper. Toss it with you could put a little olive oil on it. Not too much. You don't need much. You could put a tiny bit of vinegar if you want. And then they said it was really great to put goat cheese with it.
Oh.
And now there are a lot of watermelon and goat cheese recipes. And I think our watermelons are going to be good. They're just not here yet. But go out and get your cantaloupe musk melons now.
Oh, my, yes. I always look forward to watermelon. I'm a real watermelon kind of girl, so I do look forward.
Well, I've been buying the non-local ones. Actually, did I tell you about my watermelon kombucha combo?
Oh, no, that's something else.
We've been making kombucha regularly, Lana and I, and we've talked about that. But what I've been doing when it is ready, I mix it in the blender about half watermelon
cut up seedless, and half kombucha, and just whip it up and keep a big old jar in the fridge. You have to stir it because it does settle out. But watermelon and kombucha has been a big hit at my house this year.
Ooh, good, good. Yeah. That's a good idea to do with a melon, especially, well, I eat a lot of melon, but there's always some left over. So
it's Especially with watermelon. Actually, maybe I'll make an experiment. I'm thinking cantaloupe, kombucha, and a little ginger, maybe.
Oh, now see.
Well, I'll let you know how that goes.
A good summer thing.
Yeah, I mean, just get creative with this cantaloupe because they are so good. Make them every which way until you're just sick of them because we don't get these every year like
this.
No.
You're listening to the Donalana Kitchen. This is KHOI 89.1, and you are listening to the Donalana Kitchen. You can find out more at khoifm.org. Welcome back. This is the Donalana Kitchen. You know, on the Donalana Kitchen, we like to mix things together here, and we've always had a really good connection when we blend food and kitchen and farming and art. Somehow that all works together really well. And in our studios today, we have Valerie Williams joining us today. Valerie Williams is a choreographer, and she produces wonderful dances. This month is traditionally, she's been doing this for quite a while. There's this thing going on called Kids Commotion. And
like summer dance camp, kind
of. It is, and great things happen. And I found out that this year they're going to do dances about food. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, Valerie.
Thank you. I am so pleased to be here.
And I want to ask you, what in the world is going on, and how do you make a dance about food?
Kids Commotion is a 3-week performance, modern dance performance workshop. So we start from nothing, and 3 weeks later, we have a fully produced concert of dances. So it's not a recital because we're not just showing what we've learned. We are actually composing dances and choreographing dances as part of a full concert.
Production. And it's a production.
It is a fully produced production with lighting, costumes, everything. And we have we have a theme every year because dance, like anything else, starts from an idea. Our idea this year was food. And I started thinking, oh, food, what can we do? And then I started looking at how many pieces of music have food in the title. And then I thought, okay, I like to eat a lot. And maybe we should think about what our favorite foods are. Mm-hmm. What is a memorable meal?
Okay, for kids, this isn't all about cotton candy then, is it?
No. As a matter of fact, when I asked them about their memorable meals, we got lots and lots of different ideas. A meal at the fair, uh-huh, where I'm not going to tell you what happens, and Christmas dinner,
oh,
a birthday dinner where, you know, maybe the mom has to do something she doesn't really want to do. And going into a gelato store in Italy.
Oh.
A memorable meal. And your 16th birthday, where your grandmother makes foods from many different lands. As I mean, isn't that amazing? So the kids came up with those ideas. I structure Kids Co-Motion. I choreograph a lot of the dances, but I give ideas or I ask the kids for ideas. They are so smart and creative and constructive. They have piles of ideas, and they are full of opinions.
Oh, good.
Which we have to have if we're going to make art.
That's true. What is the age range here?
We go from 8 to 18, and this year we have kids who range in age from 8 to 17.
Mm?
Yeah, and they work really well together.
How many kids,
There are 23 kids this year.
Well, that's quite a gaggle, yeah.
You know, that's a really good number because we have at least 50% return rate. And then the kids who have skills in choreography, composition, bring those skills back with them. And the kids who are newbies don't just step up in knowledge, they leap up in knowledge because they are experiencing. So every day we have an hour technique class where we work on how do we make our bodies stronger, more flexible, more coordinated, more controlled, so that we are more able to communicate an idea to the audience. And then we have composition, and then we have rehearsal. So we dance together 4 hours a day, which is just fabulous.
So what do you do during the composition class? Is that where you're creating?
Well, actually, at first, we just learn what it does. I mean, what are the components of dances? How do you make up a dance? Because you can't just say, make up a dance about food. And if I said that to you, what would you do?
I'd start tapping my foot, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that. But if I said to you, we're going to think about dance. If we analyze, we think about body, we think about space, what happens in space, we think about time, and we think about energy. So we're calling that BEST right now, body, energy, space, time. So you have to consider all those things when you are creating a dance. So here you are, and you have the idea onion. Okay, so what do you think about with an onion? What do you think about onion?
Oh, well, maybe it would make you cry.
Okay, so now we have not just a shape. So think about it in terms of shape. Lana didn't say it, but she's making a lovely circle with her arms because onions are
round.
Yes? Okay, if we go underneath, what do onions have? Layers?
Layers.
Yeah,
layers.
Okay. So now we've got two shape words that we can work with. Two things that happen, right? So if I ask you just to think about that word onion, that idea onion, in terms of body, you might make a round shape. But now if we have to think about layers, we can't just make a shape. Now we have to make a series of shapes, right? And indicating, right? So now we've got two ideas to work with. And now we're going to think about time. Are you going to do those layers evenly in time, or are you going to do one faster, one slower? Are they going to be the same size? Are they going to be the same level in space? Now, if we're thinking about round, do we have to stay in place? Can we show that idea round traveling? So now we've gone from just one thing to do to a number of things, and we can link those together as a gesture. So if you think about this like writing a theme, right, you can think about we start with just a word, and then we have a phrase. Then we expand that into a sentence where we have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And it might not be very long, but now we can expand each of the ideas in that sentence into a paragraph.
Uh-huh.
And then if we involve other people, we can make a whole story. And that's what we do in composition. We learn how to put together dances that go from an idea into a piece.
You can do that. You can do, well, after all, you're dancing with your body. You can, that's pretty much a given. And our taste buds are part of our body. And it's a good thing that we can connect those two together.
I'm sorry, but I think there's a jackhammer right outside our wall.
I think there is right outside the wall.
Yeah, so we'll just keep talking.
That noise you hear in the background, just a little jackhammer. Don't worry about it.
If we all disappear, it means they opened the basement on us.
Oh, my gosh. There's always construction. This must be summer in Iowa. What I'm amazed at is, like you said, some of these kids have never danced before. Now, an adult would say, oh, I can't dance. Have you ever had a kid say, I can't do it?
No, and that's because I'm going to propose that we all dance. We have all danced. What we haven't all done is studied dance. And we haven't studied particular vocabulary that we call dance. But if we think about our bodies in space and time, the kind of energy that we use, we all dance. And we dance for different reasons. We dance for exercise. We dance to get together with other people. We dance to celebrate. We dance to show something of our cultures. We dance for many, many, many different reasons. However, what we are used to thinking about is that division of audience and performer.
That's right. Somebody
else
watching.
So when we talk about dance, we always think about that. We don't think about dance as a normal thing that happens in human existence.
Lots of people dance around the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Oh, very good.
Yes. Or you pick up your child and you dance around with your child.
Of course. Of course. I want to ask, this is hard work for kids. You said 4 hours a day of not only using the old brain, but it is a physical sort of thing. I bet everybody's hungry at rehearsal at the end of it.
We eat really well. So at noon, well, actually, we take breaks. After class, we take a 5-minute break. And I say, if you're hungry, grab something from your lunch and eat it because you need calories to dance and you need calories to think. You need energy. And we get our energy from the food that we eat, of course. So because we are thinking about food, and this, I've been asking the kids about what they eat and why they eat it.
Oh, what?
Oh.
And that's been very interesting. In our house, we have a rule in packing our lunches. You have to have at least 3 different colors of food. And beyond that, I don't care.
Oh.
Because anything that's in the refrigerator is fair game.
Mm-hmm.
So we might have, in fact, nieces and great nieces and nephews and great nephews have not great nephews yet. I don't have any great nephew. I have one great nephew.
Uh-huh.
At any rate, I love having them come and stay with me, and they participate in Kids with Co-Motion. We don't have any food fights because they pack their own lunches, and they have to pack at least 3 different colors of food. Well, we had pasta last night.
Huh?
So they have butter noodles in one dish, blueberries in another one, and some peanut butter.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, and I look at it and I think, okay, 3 different colors of food, that's fine.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so as long as there's 3 different colors of food, and then someone asks, well, what about all cookies? Well, you know what? I actually just don't have all cookies in my refrigerator. But
plus, they're very rarely more than light brown or light brown, right?
Exactly. They're about the same color.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a nephew once who really liked white food, milk, potatoes, bread.
And yum. Cheese.
Yeah, and cheese. And he would have happily subsisted on that entirely. So what I said was, you have to have 3 colors, and then he would put grapes and something else. And we didn't have any fights about what to eat, but he ate leftover salmon. You know what I mean? Because that was pink,
because
he had to have another color.
There you go.
Right. Can I say that Kids Co-Motion performs this weekend on July 26th and 27th. That's Friday and Saturday nights at 7:30 p.m. at the Ames City Auditorium, which is a jewel of a space for the city of Ames.
Yes, it is.
It is a fine show, and I can't wait to find out how these kids have danced about food.
You can get tickets at the door.
Yes, very good. You can.
Thank you for being with us today, Valerie Williams, talking about Kids Commotion, Feast, Dances About Food. Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. This is good. Thank you for being with us today.
What a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Good.
And
good.
Thanks for doing this work in our community.
I love it. Kids Commotion is my summer treat. It is also an enormous amount of work.
Yes, yes.
But we have fabulous support from the Commission on the Arts in Ames, the Ames Commission on the Arts. We have wonderful support from the Collegiate United Methodist Church Wesley Foundation. They allow us, for a small fee, to rehearse for 2 weeks in the Annex Auditorium. It's really, really wonderful. We have many friends, and we so appreciate people who donate for scholarships, etc. So we are happy to do this in our community and to make sure that we have thoughtful, considering, artful people who are going to be running the world when
young
I'm in
people.
My dotage.
Yes,
very good.
Yes.
And you're doing a great job. Thank you. Thank you. That's Kids Commotion. Good. Donna, this time of the show, we kind of slide into some upcoming events here.
Yes, we do have coming up an event where Lana and I will be participating. The Ag Arts Field Day this year is August 25th, noon to 4 p.m., and it is out at Dean and Denise Beekler's beautiful farm up on the Skunk River. And there will be Dean, who's a fabulous artist and collects a lot of Iowa other artists. His work and his collection will be on display. There will be a live performance of the full play of Map of My Kingdom, which is a spectacular piece written by former Iowa Poet Laureate Mary Swander. I'll be cooking up some food for the day, and a good time will be had by all. You can find out more at agarts.org, and that's the Ag Arts Field Day, August 25th from noon to 4. And the address is 56676 106th Street, Ames, Iowa, 50010. You will have to Google map that because the directions are down a bunch of nice gravelly roads.
We can find it.
Yeah.
That's good. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. Donalana Kitchen comes to you live Tuesday at noon. It's repeated Tuesday at 7 p.m. or anytime. Support this fine community radio station. We talked about good food, and thanks to Valerie Williams for joining us today. Music today by Alistair Frazier and Natalie Haas from their CD, Fire and Grace. We'll go out with a tune called Calliope House. There's lots of summer left. Go out and enjoy. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
And along with the Jackhammer, we have engineering by Paul Hertz. Eat good food and enjoy life.